Hello, friends, and welcome back to the While We're Waiting Hope After Child Loss podcast. I'm Jill Sullivan, your host and one of the co-founders of the While We're Waiting ministry. This is a podcast of stories of devastating loss and grief and heartbreak and struggle, and stories of hope and healing and faith and, yes, even joy. Underlying every conversation is the hope we have in Jesus Christ, which makes it possible to not just survive the loss of a child, but to live well while we're waiting to see them again in heaven one day. You can learn more about our ministry and the free bereaved parent retreats we host by visiting our website at www.whilewerewaiting.org. Welcome to episode number 199. This past fall, we had the privilege of presenting at the Our Hearts Are Home conference for bereaved parents in Indianapolis. That conference included a session on sibling loss led by our daughter, Bethany Sullivan, which I'd like to share with you today. My husband, Brad, and I also make an appearance in her presentation, and you'll hear a very honest discussion between the three of us about the things we did right and the things we did wrong as we continue to parent her through her grief. It's a live presentation in a church, so the audio quality is not quite as good as if it were recorded in a studio, but hopefully that won't be too much of an issue for you. This is an episode you'll want to listen to yourself first, and then maybe share with your children to open up lines of communication about their own grief. I hope it is a blessing to you.
My name is Bethany. My parents are Brian Jill Sullivan. So I have not personally had a child loss story, but I will be telling my story from the perspective of a surviving sibling. So first thing that I'll talk about is just like my story, kind of what we went through and what we dealt with. And then I'll go into kind of, you know, what should I do for my surviving children, kind of things that we went through, some things that we battled through, some things that we, you know, have learned, you know, across these 14 years that we've, you know, been in this journey. Growing up, we had a very easy life. My childhood was very easy. I had all my grandparents. I had, you know, several cousins, and it was easy. Life was easy. We had no issues. Nobody was ever sick. Everything was awesome until 2008. And I was in seventh grade. My sister, Hannah, was starting to get sick. She was sick, you know, a couple mornings, and just had such a bad headache that she was sick to her stomach. And then they finally took her to the doctor, and upon many, many tests, they found that she had a brain tumor in the center of her brain. So it was a pretty quick diagnosis. Immediately sent her into surgery. They tested the tumor. It was a glioblastoma, and it was like pretty obvious pretty soon that she was going to have a very long, hard battle with brain cancer. And it was kind of like, okay, she's still a child, and this is typically a brain cancer that adults have. And when it's in adults, it's pretty much fatal. It's a death sentence. But since she was so young, they didn't really know, you know, there was still hope there for a little while. So she had surgery. And she went through chemo, radiation, the whole thing. She had a couple months of, you know, cancer-free. And then it came back. She was still having the same, started having the same symptoms. It came back, took her back to the doctor. She had tumors everywhere. And they pretty much said there was nothing really else that they could do. And so from diagnosis to her passing, it was exactly a year and a day. So it was, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it was pretty quick, you know. And as a sibling, I mean, she was my very best friend. She was my best friend. I never had life without her. She was the one that I went to for all my questions about life and all my secrets. And I mean, she was my best friend. And from her going from being my strong older sister, she was 3.5 years older than me, to gradually becoming sicker and sicker and sicker, it was so hard to watch. It was so hard to watch. So that was, you know, a very, very long grief journey before there was even, you know, a death. She passed whenever I was in eighth grade, and we kind of went through a roller coaster of grief from then on. I have a couple of disclaimers before I really get into everything. This is coming from a perspective of a 13-year-old girl. I lost Hannah at 13. It's been 14 years now. I'll be 15 in February. But it's a little bit different. I mean, there's, you know, you guys were adults whenever you lost your kids. Like, I was only 13. I didn't know. My brain wasn't fully developed. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what grief was. I had never lost anybody. I'd never even seen anybody really sick. I mean, it was just different. You're here or you're watching online because you love your surviving children and you want to help them. And that's so exciting. That's awesome. Because we do need help. We absolutely do. I want you to know that they will be okay. There is, it may take 14 years, but eventually we'll be okay. Everybody's journey is different, as you all know. I mean, everybody has a different story. Everybody's kind of different journey. My journey has continued to change, you know, over 14 years. And just because this is all the things that I struggled with or things that didn't work for me or did work for me, it may be different for your kids, your surviving kids, because everybody's journey is different. I would love to be able to give a step-by-step guide of like, hey, this is exactly how everything's going to be great after this, and you do this and this and this, and then it'll be over, it'll be great. But that's not, unfortunately, that's not how it works. We all know that. We get to talk about it now. My parents and I get to talk about it now after a lot of time has passed, and lots of grace and forgiveness has been given. We talk about it now and share hurt between the both of us to help you and help your surviving children. And I'm so thankful that God gets to use our pain. I wish I didn't have that pain, but because I do, I'm thankful that God gets to use it. I was looking up just sibling loss statistics because I was just curious, like how many people really lose their sibling? Like how many people understand the grief that I've been through? And for under the age of 18, I saw one article that said 1%, and then I saw another article that said 5 to 8% lose their sibling under the age of 18. That's a very small amount. A lot of, you know, our peers have literally no idea what we're going through. Surviving children are much more likely to suffer from anxiety and depression and substance abuse. And just because it's a different kind of loss than child loss, it is not a different degree. And they talked about, you know, a lot of times the sibling loss is the forgotten. We're the forgotten grievers, and that's what this whole thing is called. I was asked once a day, at least, while Hannah was going through, you know, all her chemo and radiation, and then for the years afterwards, I got asked once a day, well, how's your mom doing? How's your dad doing? And no one ever asked me how I was doing. So your kids are going back to school and everyone's talking about, you know, oh man, this must be so hard on your parents. Or I've even had people tell me, man, it must be so hard on your parents and your grandparents. I'm like, I'm here. Like, it's hard on me too. It hurts. It hurts just as much for me as well. I get asked all the time because I have talked to a couple of retreats that my parents have hosted. I've talked for a couple hours just answering questions like, you know, what do people really have questions about? And a lot of people say that their kids won't talk to them. Why won't my kids talk to me about it? And I don't have all the answers. I'm not even going to pretend that I don't. I don't know why your kids personally don't talk about it. But I know for me, I was told from day one of diagnosis or death, we're all told to be strong for our parents. So many people held my hands and said, please be strong for your mom. And I'm like, okay, who's going to be strong for me to be strong for my mom? Because there's not a whole lot of people there. another thing, I just did not want to bring extra hurt to my parents. I think we both grieved behind closed doors. My parents grieved together. They had each other. And they grieved behind closed doors because they didn't want to hurt me. And then I grieved behind closed doors because I'm like, well, I'm the only one grieving. I'm the only one still struggling because I had no idea that they were still grieving. I just thought I was the only one that was crazy because I was 13. We don't want to add to your pain. We don't want to add to your struggles because we know you're hurting. We don't want to add to that pain. And none of, you know, like I said earlier, we go back to school. None of our friends know what to do with this. None of our friends understand what we're going through, or they'll tell you like, oh, I totally understand what you're going through. My dog died 2 years ago. And I'm like, okay, well, that's wildly different, but okay. You know, if adults say dumb things to you, can you only imagine what 13, 14, 15, 16 year olds say to me, or, you know, your children? I struggled. You struggled with having small talk. You know, 13-year-old girls, all they know is small talk about what the new, you know, style is, or who's talking to who, or what drama we got in the, you know, basketball locker room or whatever. And I was just worried about, like, literally having my head above water. I was struggling to even go to school because I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to have to walk the same hallways that my sister walked. I didn't want to have to deal with the teachers who, my dad was my high school principal. So everybody, we went to a really small school as well. So everybody knew who I was. There was no hiding. There was no, like, you know, 200, 300 class, 300 people class. It was like 46 people total in my class. So everybody knew who I was. Everybody knew what I was dealing with. And I had teachers that literally called me Hannah, because I know in their mind they're thinking probably, don't say Hannah, don't say Hannah, don't say Hannah. And then they would call on me and they'd say Hannah. I'm like, oh, that's hard to hear in second period when you're 13 years old. I lost a lot of friends because they didn't know how to talk to me. A lot of friends. It was tough. Like I said earlier, you have lived a whole life before you even knew your child. You know, you grew up, you went to high school, middle school, junior high school, and you graduated, you went to college, and then you found your spouse and y'all had a kid together. That's when you met, you know, your child. I never lived a day without Hannah. Not that it's, you know, different. It's just that I never knew any life without Hannah. And that was really, really hard. Another question that people ask is, what do my kids need? What does my kid need in this time? And I would say overarching theme is grace. Give them grace. Like I said, I was still a child whenever I lost Hannah, and I was forced to grow up just like that immediately. I was an adult. My brain, although, was not fully developed, and you know, I was thrust into this world of grief and unknown. We have so much pressure on us to be perfect. Hannah, straight A student. She was good at everything. She was super nice. She was great. And so when she passed, I mean, and for anybody, you never go to a funeral and they're like, man, they were a horrible person. You go to a funeral and they're like, man, they were a saint. They were so great. They lit up a room. And Hannah really did. She really did light up a room. But once somebody dies, they're immediately put on this pedestal because they cannot make any other mistakes. And then here I was at 13 looking at my entire life ahead of me. I'm like, I'm going to make a whole bunch of mistakes. Like, she can't ever mess up again. I have a lot of messing up to do. And that's intimidating. It's daunting. And for me, I was like, okay, I'm never going to be perfect. I won't ever live up to Hannah. So I'm just going to go the opposite way and rebel from, you know, perfection, I guess. It was just hard. I will say too, I feel like some of the mistakes that I made growing up, you know, even in high school and in college and even in my adult life, some of it is I wanted attention again. A lot of times when you lose a child, a lot of your attention, or when they're sick, almost all of the attention was on Hannah, which I don't discount. I mean, she needed all the attention at that time. But as a 13-year-old, it was hard to not have attention. I would say give them a safe space to talk about it. But if they don't want to talk about it, don't push it. Sometimes I don't want to talk about it. Sometimes, you know, we'll be sitting down for dinner and it comes up and I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk about this right now. And that's okay. And you have to give them a safe space to say, I don't want to talk about it, and then respect it and say, okay, I get it. Because I know sometimes y'all don't want to talk about it. Don't want to be ambushed by it. I would also say let their events be their events. Whether that's their graduation, whether that's their wedding, whether, you know, birthdays, whatever celebration that they have, whatever event that they have, let that be theirs. You know, my whole life, I was either the principal's kid or I was Hannah's sister. Nothing was ever about me, which I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not like everything has to be about me, but there are times where in my graduation or in my, you know, wedding, like I want that to be, I don't want to be overshadowed, or I don't want it, you know. And if your child, your surviving kid says, no, I want this to be a, you know, I want to have their picture at my graduation and take a picture with my sibling. I had cut out a picture of Hannah and put it in my graduation cap. No one knew it was there. I didn't make a big deal about it, but she was there with me. But just little things like that, just let their events be their events. I hope that I'm explaining that correctly. And sit with them in their grief. I was talking to somebody out there earlier, and she was saying that she just loves when her surviving children talks to them and says, you know, that they're struggling too and that they are really missing their sibling. And she said that she just loves that she feels like they're coming alongside them. And she feels like, you know, it's, she just said she just sits there and listens with them. That's all we need, because nobody else is listening to us. We don't have, you know, grief share or, you know, support groups. Nobody else is listening to them. So when they are ready to grieve and talk about it, just sit with them in their grief and show them that they're not alone. Sit, listen, cry with them, and validate their hurt and validate their feelings, because I promise you, not many other people are. Be honest with them about your own faith, your own faith journey, your own faith struggles, you know, what you're dealing with God. Be honest with them about your grief. If you're struggling, let them know. Like I said, I had no idea my parents were grieving. Not a clue. I genuinely thought I was the only one still hurting. I thought they were over it. You know, every once in a while I would see them cry, but most of the time I just thought it was just me. So be honest with them about your hurt. Be honest with them about death. One super important thing is don't forget your living children. They're still here. They need you. When you talk about your child that has passed, when you talk about your story, make sure that you're including your surviving children in your story, especially if they're right there. Make sure that you're like, yeah, I had a daughter that passed of brain cancer, and this is my other daughter, and we're so proud of her. You know, that inclusion is so important. Celebrate their victories and celebrate their achievements. Post them on Facebook, especially if you're posting a lot about your child that has passed. Make sure that you're including your child that's still surviving, because they need that. One thing that we've really dealt with is let them know that you would be just as sad if it would have been them that they lost. It took 14 years for my parents to say it, and it meant so much to hear that. Not that I didn't know that my parents loved me. I knew that they loved me. But to hear them say that they would be just as sad if it would have been me that got cancer and died, it meant a lot, because one of those things of one that passes is always on a pedestal. She's perfect. And I hear the way that they talk about her being perfect. Like, I'm not perfect. So maybe it would have been better if I would have. It's real thoughts. I get a lot of questions about if counseling, if they needed to force their kids to go to counseling. Because a lot of them have asked me, they're like, I don't know what to do with my kid. I just need to send them to counseling. Yes, counseling is good a lot of the times. My story, I was struggling in school because I would stay up all night and cry and grieve alone, and then I would not stay awake in school, so I would sleep through all my classes. And so I was not doing well, and so my parents talked me into going into counseling, and we had a great counselor. She was a really great lady, but she hadn't lost a sibling. She hadn't lost anybody, really. And so, you know, she talked to me about, okay, well, there's like this step by step. She showed me like this sheet, and there were like these rocks that you can just jump from one rock to another, and there's going to be some stumbling blocks, but there's an end, and it's going to be great. And I was like, I don't see it. And so it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I know I have to do this many sessions, so I'm just going to lie my way through it. And just so I can just make this easy on all of us and get this over with. And that's what I did. And I didn't really do a whole lot for me because I wasn't ready for it. I think finding the right counselor that gets it, that understands, is super important. Because as you all know, talking to people who get it is a whole lot easier to talk to people who don't get it. So finding the right counselor, I've been in counseling since then, and it's been worlds better, and has changed my route in life, honestly. Grief will change over time and can come in waves. Personally, for me, my milestones have been the hardest. So graduating high school, super tough. Graduating college, super tough. I'm like, she should be here. She should be here. It's not fair. I bought a house 3 years ago. I'm like, she should be able to come stay with me. She should be able to celebrate this huge achievement with me. Milestones are the hardest. Holidays and birthdays, hard. They're very hard. Even my own holidays and birthdays, my own birthday. Hannah's birthday is this month. And as soon as it became October 1st, I was like, let's just get October over. I hate it. And it's been 14 years. Sibling grief, it has affected every area of my life. Still affecting every area of my life, relationships and everything. And sometimes we walk this path alone, especially if the surviving sibling is unmarried. And there's really nobody. You guys have each other. I don't have another sibling. I don't have a husband. So it's hard because I do grieve alone. God has redeemed a lot in my life. But at first, just like with my mom, it was really, really hard to go back to church. I did not fit in youth group at all. Just small talks just didn't work. I even went to my parents' Sunday school class for a couple years until I graduated high school, because I could not step back into youth group. I didn't fit in. I didn't feel joyful. I didn't feel blessed. I couldn't do the songs with the motions. I didn't want to sing in church. I just couldn't. I was angry. I was hurt. My heart hurt. I'm so thankful that God has redeemed that relationship, but it's taken years, because I do feel like I had a little bit of delayed grief because I did push everything down to help my parents I thought I was helping my parents. I pushed everything down for a long time because I thought they were done grieving, so I should be done grieving. So I'm just going to put this on a shelf and move on with my life. Well, eventually, that train catches back up to you and runs you over. And so it forces you to deal with your grief. I do still struggle. I do still struggle. And I was so thankful as she was talking about the last group, she was talking about lament. And, you know, I don't think I've done a whole lot of that. Just sitting with it and just telling God all the things that hurt. So I learned a lot. Is there anything that I've missed or that you want to add?
Just to, you know, I shared this in our meeting with the parents a while ago. We were trying to do the best we knew to do. So there is some regrets there. And as I know now from what Bethany has shared with us, and she's, you know, you wish you had a do-over for certain things, but we didn't know what we didn't know. We have learned a lot from her. And then I can say that we can talk about things and appreciate each other on a different level now than we did back then. But we were just trying to breathe and get through the grief. And she was too. We've learned a lot in hindsight.
And I'm so thankful that we are in a place that we can talk about it and deal with it and then be able to share with you guys, because it's just a glimpse into, you know, what siblings deal with, because a lot of times we don't talk about it because we don't want to hurt you. I could have probably shared what I needed a little bit more, but I didn't know how to do that either.
Yeah. I think that's, again, is a redo. And that comment that we made to her, that if it had been you, it would have been just as bad. We heard that from a mom and a daughter that came to a retreat. They had both lost kids. And they were together. And when the mom started sharing her story, she turned to her daughter and said, "Baby, I want you to know if it had been you, I'd feel the same way." I said, "We hadn't said that to Bethany." We felt that. We knew that. But she had heard us say that. So guess what we did? We told her that. And so that was good for us, just to verbalize that and for her to know how we really felt. But the reality of this broken world and the impact of sin and how that gets in between everything, the relationships we have, that's why we're dealing with death. It's just good to know that we're in a different place, the three of us. And our daughter, our sister, our time's not done. And we look forward to that. And we talk about some eternal things at times. You know, we're not doom and gloom. We're all going to go to heaven soon. But just to focus on the fact that that time is coming. We still have life to live here, and I'll say that too. You know, God has purpose for us all, and he's not done with us. But we're grateful for her. Jill, do you have anything else you wanted to say?
I'll just say, too, something I'm just beginning to realize as she has grown into an adult is how sibling grief evolves through the years and as they mature. You know, where she was when she was 13, 14, 15, 16 is different than where she is now at a woman of 28. And because she's, you know, when they lose a sibling young, there's so many stages of life they're still going through. And at every stage, as they mature, they have to grieve. It's like they have to grieve all over again. Whereas we're already adults, you know, our grief is, it's just steady. It's pretty much the same all the time. As she grows and has new experiences in her life, and as she gets to the point, you know, even when we think about we're going to be old someday, and, you know, if the Lord tarries, which I hope he comes back before we're too terribly old, the entire burden of caring for us is going to fall on her. You know, and so even that is something to grieve and to think about.
We were talking just yesterday, just kind of preparing for this, and I was just sharing, like, you know, I won't, if I, Lord willing, find a husband and have kids, or if my husband to be has kids, I might be an aunt, but I will never be Hannah's kid's aunt. I will never be Aunt Bethany. That's hard. Yeah. That's not fair.
Right.
But, you know, I know heaven will be much sweeter, but.
Yes, but while you're here, that's hard.
It's not fun. Yeah. Yeah. And I had the article that I was reading about, you know, percentage wise, you know, how many people have lost siblings. And it was talking about how seniors are so much happier. Senior citizens are so much happier when they have their siblings. And I was like, oh, I won't have that. Mm-hmm. And his mom has 9 brothers and sisters, and they've just lost one recently. But, you know, they do sisters weekends. Sisters week, all week, that she gets to hang out with all her sisters. And I'm like, man, that would be nice. It's just another stage of grief. Mm-hmm. Grief definitely changes different stages of life.
And I think another thing, and I don't know what age your surviving siblings are, but even as a dental hygienist or especially as a younger sibling, they get asked all the time, well, how many brothers and sisters do you have? That's how adults make conversation with kids, is ask them how many brothers and sisters you have. We know as grieving parents, that's a really, when people say, well, how many kids do you have? That's a question that's hard for us to answer. Think about trying to answer that question as a teenager who's just watched her sister go through a brutal year of cancer. That's a hard question, you know, and we don't realize how difficult those things are for our surviving children. And one other thing, and Bethany mentioned this about Facebook posts and things like that. We all, as bereaved parents, we love to post things about our children that have gone to heaven, you know, on their birthday or their heaven day or whatever. But you know what? I need to be posting way more about her than I do about Hannah, and making sure that she realizes how important she is, you know, to us. And we just need to be really careful about not, she talked about how that sibling that died is kind of perfect. They can't make any more mistakes. And I think we as parents need to be really careful not to put that child on that pedestal, because there's a tendency to do that. So we need to be aware of that as grieving parents. Do y'all have questions for her or for us? I'm going to repeat the question for the people that are on Zoom. She asked if Bethany is connected with any other bereaved only siblings since she's been an adult.
I'm thinking of just a couple.
Yeah.
But there's been a few. We've tried to do some sibling, we've brainstormed to do like a siblings retreat so we could, you know, siblings can get together just like the parents retreats. And it's a harder thing to do because it's all different ages. I was 13 when my sister passed. And so when we're trying to think about, okay, do we want people under the age of, say, 18? To go, well, then that would have taken me out of it. But at the same time, people who are in their 20s may talk differently than people who are 13. You know, it's just hard. So we do have a siblings group on Facebook, and it's called While We're Waiting for Bereaved Siblings. And there are several posts. There are several people who are on the page, and they do, you know, we do talk and encourage each other. It's not quite as much as the parents page, but we try to help and encourage each other. But yeah, that's only a few. There's not a whole lot. And it took years before I met any. I think Tori was the first one I met, and that was several years afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I didn't have While We're Waiting, I can't think of any. If my parents didn't do this, I can't think of any that I would know. There was a couple girls that lost siblings while I was in dental hygiene school, but it was like at the very, very end, and you know, we graduated and that was it. So
The question is, when Bethany's parents started While We're Waiting, were you happy that we had started that, or was it another blow to you and just kind of caused some extra pain? I will say, now that she's an adult, we can talk about all of these things openly. We do not get our feelings hurt. So whatever she's, I have no idea what she's about to say, but say the truth, speak the truth.
It's still hard. I have a dear friend who's older, who I met through, he's my patient, and then we've just become best friends, and him and his wife feed me dinner all the time, and they're great people. But he was talking to me the other night, and he's like, does it bother you? He asked me. No one's ever asked me. He's like, is that like a burden on you? Does it, you know, is it hard for you to talk about it all the time? And I just started crying, and I was like, man, nobody's ever even thought about that. It is hard because sometimes I don't want to talk about it. And because they do ministry and because they want to, you know, reach as many people as possible and talk to as many people as possible, sometimes, you know, we'll be eating dinner at a restaurant and they'll be like, hey, my sister or my daughter died of cancer and we do these retreats. And I'm like, I'm just trying to eat my chicken. Like, you know, so sometimes it is hard. Sometimes it is overwhelming, and it's, you know, sometimes I just want to be, I don't know. It is hard sometimes. I can't, to be totally honest with you, I don't really remember how I felt when it first started. I know I went to dinner with you guys after church, whenever you and Larry and Janice met and talked about starting a retreat. And, you know, I was present for it, but I didn't really know my role. What I am thankful for is that they have never pushed me to do anything. So honestly, I was one, they said that they were going to this, you know, conference here, and they were like discussing the different topics. And I was like, well, if y'all want me to talk, I'll talk. I'll go. Typically, that's not me. Typically, I don't really talk about it. But I just felt led to do that. I don't necessarily feel led to host retreats all the time. And I'm thankful that they don't say, hey, you need to, you know. So that's a long roundabout answer. But
I will say, too, just people are very, and maybe because of what we do, people are very good at remembering when it's Hannah's birthday, yes, or when it's Hannah's heaven day for us. But as the sibling, her friends and the people in her circle don't remember that. And so we always try to set aside our weekends, you know, where we can be together on those especially hard days. And I'll be sitting there and my phone is just dinging, ding, 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 texts, Facebook messages, all this stuff, you know, praying for you today, remembering Hannah today. Hers is silent because people don't remember, or they don't think about.
And it's even sending people in our family sometimes.
Yes. Yes.
That will message them, but won't message me. Yeah. And I remember one time, you know, we're like, I got 200 and something messages. And I'm like, I got zero. So it is, yeah. And it's the forgotten, the forgotten grievers.
This session is called The Forgotten Grievers. And that is true.
I do want to say one thing. I am very proud of what they do. And, you know, anytime I do talk about it, if it comes in conversation with my patients, sometimes they'll ask me how many siblings I have or what do my parents do. And so I'll tell them and I'm like, okay, well, here we go. And then I'll tell them.
Do you have 30 minutes?
Yeah. Like, do you really want to hear this when you're getting your teeth cleaned? We'll find out. You can't say much while I'm cleaning your teeth anyways. But I will always say, you know, I'm very proud of what they do. I'm thankful that they can use Hannah's story for good and to reach, you know, other people and to help with other grievers.
What I would just like to say is we are still Hannah's and Bethany's mom and dad, and we still have a responsibility to be Bethany's mom and dad. And just even, we're still learning and we want to grow to be a better parent, even as the adults. And I think that's something that whatever age of our kids, we need to learn and grow and attempt to be. God gave us this beautiful girl, and we need to be the mom and dad that we need to be to her throughout her life. And we can still be mom and dad, even though she's 28 years old. So,
sure, just tell everybody how old I am.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You had a question.
And the question is just about the lack or the loss of identity as a sibling, especially when you lose your own sibling. What are your thoughts?
Because I'm technically not a sister anymore. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of advice on how to make you, you know, feel like you still have an identity there, other than just to celebrate every milestone, every grade, every, you know, graduation, whatever, just celebrate everything so that they just feel important. I will say a lot of my identity went from being, well, the principal's kid to being Hannah's sister, the one who lost a sister. That was my identity. And it honestly, it was hard to shake. It's still hard. That was a little bit why I didn't want to live in Hot Springs anymore. I moved to 3.5 hours away to Northwest Arkansas, which I know an 8-year-old can do, but I wanted to meet new people who didn't know me as Hannah's sister, which that doesn't mean I don't want to be Hannah's sister and doesn't mean, you know, any of that, but it was just easier for me to not be my sole identity. I was in Hot Springs last weekend visiting them, and we were talking about church and everything, and I was like, I don't like to go to church in Hot Springs because I feel like everybody looks at me as the girl that lost her sister, because it's the same church that we grew up in, and they all saw Hannah's battle with cancer, and they all saw, you know, me struggle for, you know, the years that I was still at church, and so I don't want to go back to that church, even though y'all still go to it, because I don't want that.
And we give her grace not to go.
Yeah.
You know, to make that decision.
They don't even ask me. They don't even ask me, which I'm thankful, because I think they know.
Yeah, the question is, how can you help an adult sibling or a pair of adult siblings grieve from a distance?
I'm hoping that, which obviously I don't know your surviving kids, but I'm hoping that they have a relationship, that they have each other to lean on, because they are the only ones that know each other's grief. They're the only ones that know each other's hurt and what each other are going through. Obviously, you know, too, because you're still have that loss, but they're able to really lean on each other because they were both sisters.
I would say just supporting them in any way, remembering them,
yeah,
you know, on those special dates and,
exactly,
and things like that. And, you know, just good parenting.
I think being intentional to talk about when they want to, because I, you know, I didn't, again, heard Bethany say, we can't just bring it up all the time, but when she wants to talk about Hannah, when your daughters want to talk about your daughter in heaven, just give them that safe place to do that.
And like I said at the beginning, it's harder for me too, because from my perspective of being a 13-year-old and never living life without her, you know, I do feel like my loss would be different, not a different degree, but different if I was grown and, you know, had my own family and was doing my own thing and living in my own town. And so was she. So I do think that's, it's different.
And, you know, the thing that we, and I know this is the Sunday school answer, but talk about with your other children is, it ain't over. You got eternity and forevermore. I like to think about spending eternity with my daughters in heaven. And we're going to, you know, we think about, we can only imagine, but we're going to get to, he's going to redeem that time that her sister wasn't with her. Our daughter wasn't with us. He's the redeemer. He's going to redeem that time. And we've got that coming. So that's, I like to think about those things because the best is yet to come. And we still learn, and we want to learn to help our surviving sibling. This is a learning process. With God's help, we want to know how we can be a better mom and dad and support her, because she is our world. She's our universe.
I was talking to my mom beforehand, and I was like, I just don't want this to feel like a bashing session of like, man, these are all the things that my parents did wrong. And I don't want it to feel that way. If I was talking to siblings, you know, I feel like that talk would be different of like, you have to give your parents grace because your parents are grieving. Yes, they may grieve behind closed doors. And, you know, that would be a different talk. But because I'm talking, you know, to parents who can look more into, you know, the window of sibling grief. But yeah, I just didn't want it to seem like, because there are definitely things I could have done different. Definitely could have given more grace. Definitely could have talked through things more. Could have tried in counseling a little bit, but we made it.
By the grace of God, we did it. I'm gonna spring something on you.
Oh, good.
I hadn't prepared you for, but this is October. We're going into holiday season. As a sibling,
it's not fun.
It's not fun. What could we have done, or you know, different or better? What advice would you give to parents who are about to walk their siblings, their surviving children, through a holiday season without one of their brothers or sisters?
I will say the hardest thing for me, because I had several girl siblings, everyone had a sister, girl cousins. So it's me and my sister, and then two siblings that were very, very close. So six girl cousins, super close. And so when Hannah passed, I was the only one that had no sister. And then later on, there was another set of sisters born as well. So that's, you know, four set of sisters. And now I'm the only one alone. So Christmases are still hard, especially as an unmarried girl, because I, you know, not only am I the only person that is siblingless, but I'm also the only single person. My parents have each other. So, you know, that's different. And then like, I also don't have any siblings. So it's just, it's hard. It's hard. And especially because, you know, for several years they did sibling pictures, sister pictures. And so, you know, they would get up there and take their Christmas picture. And then when it gets to my turn, I'm like, I guess I'll take a picture with my mom. Like, it was just, it was very strange. It was a weird thing. So even the extended family don't always get it. The extended cousins don't always get it. I spent a lot of Christmases crying. I still could probably cry every Christmas, but I've learned to, you know, keep it together a little bit. Yeah, just give them grace. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I can say.
I know that first Christmas we tried to kind of give you the lead. What do you want to do for Christmas? And you chose, we went and got a real tree and some different ornaments and things like that. Because we wanted to kind of, you don't even remember.
Don't even remember it. Yeah.
Okay, the question is, does Hannah give Bethany a gift for Christmas?
We may need to make up for lost time now.
4 years worth of gifts we owe.
That might have been a good thing. Yes. Oh, see, now we're talking. No, we didn't ever think about that, but that would be super cool. I would think. I think for every sibling, it may be different. But yeah, there were some years that we did the extended family Christmas. They would write on, everybody was supposed to do some homework and do something nice out of the goodness of their heart for people, and then write it down, and it would be in memory of Hannah. Whether you know, paid for the drive-through behind you, or whether you know, gave a homeless man a sandwich, whatever. And you would write that down, it would be in memory of Hannah. And then at Christmas, we were supposed to read it. We did that a couple years, and it was sweet. It was sweet. It was very sweet. And then we stopped. It just kind of went away. Yeah, so that was a good way to remember them by.
Yeah. The question is, with a child who had an illness and hospital stays, things like that, and the sibling wanted to come and be a part of all of that and maybe saw some things that were traumatic and difficult, and how has that impacted you, or was that something you feel like you saw too much? Or
I wanted to be very involved, and there were things looking back on that I wish I would have been more involved. I didn't get to go to not one of her chemo treatments. And that's something that I feel like I missed out on because I wasn't there for her. I wasn't there for her during that time. So I wish, obviously you can't take me out of school every single time, but I wish I could have been there for her in that situation. She basically died in my arms. You would think when someone has cancer, they just go in their sleep. Well, it was a very traumatic last few hours of life. I was there. I stayed at the hospice with her the whole time. The hospice center was gracious enough to give us a room, and we're all there. So I had a little bit of PTSD type things from her actual death. I'm glad I was there with all the right after her surgery, seeing her in the ICU and stuff like that. I will say, after she passed, I was the only one that wanted to view her body. And I went in there and I was like, wow, she looks so much better than the last time I saw her. So I brought them in. I was like, please, please come see her. I think you'll be okay. I think it will be a good thing. So I think you guys did the best that you could. I think, having her do exactly what she wanted. Yeah, I would have been hurt if they would have said, no, you can't be the body, or no, you can't, be with her after surgery, because I would have felt like I missed out. Like, I feel like I missed out on chemo treatments, which I'm sure I didn't really miss out on too much. But so I think you guys did the best you can. And that's going to be something that she will deal with. And that's something that talking with people and counseling, if that needs to happen, that will help.
And it may be something that gives her more compassion too as she grows older because of the things that she saw. And she may want to go into the medical field someday. You just don't know how God might use that.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't miss out. I'm thankful.
I'll close this in prayer. Father, I just thank you for this time. I thank you for, as we can talk about siblings and in their journey, that they're sometimes forgotten. And Father, as parents and as loved ones, we pray that we can know how to respond and be the mom and dad that you want us to be, Father. We thank you for our kids, the ones that are still with us and the ones we have in heaven, Lord, and help us to be the parents you want us to be to them. And we thank you for each of them, Father. And again, thank you for this time we could be together and just to share and be real with each other. And thank you for Bethany and just being real. And I just thank you for her and what a blessing she is. And just grateful for her and just her willingness to share her heart. And we love you, Lord, in Jesus' name.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the While We're Waiting Hope After Child Loss podcast. If this podcast has been a blessing to you, please take just a moment to leave a rating or a review, and please feel free to share it with someone you know who might be helped by it. We're so grateful for all of you who come back and listen every week, and those of you who may be listening for the very first time. I hope God has used it to encourage you today and to help you live well while you're waiting.